there is hundreds and thousands of good people around. It's just that we have to step out of our comfort zone. We have to reach out and we have to find those folks. And that's our responsibility.
Welcome to Intrinsically Motivated, where we're having conversations with experts in the field of addiction, recovery, and those who've been affected by it as we seek to mobilize the church to replace addiction and mental health challenges with flourishing. Today we're talking to Tennessee State Representative Tim Hicks. We'll be talking about his journey from addiction to recovery and into a life of public service. I'm Tanner Clements, and I'm the Media and Training Director for Uplift Appalachia. As much as I like to listen to things that are politically informed, I don't really understand kind of how a lot of the politics and things work. But before we kind of get into the politics of everything, so have you been in East Tennessee your whole life?
Been here my whole life. I was born in around Gray and have lived there my entire life and love this area, love the people.
Yeah.
That's a big reason why I decided to run for office and serve. So they sort of agreed that I would be a good fit for that. And so we've worked hard for the last 4 years in doing that.
Yeah. So you are in the House of Representatives for the state of Tennessee.
Yes.
House of Representatives for the state of Tennessee. And what areas do you serve?
I have like the northern part of Washington County.
Northern part of Washington County.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you said growing up in this area, you love the people, you love the area. So what along your journey really kind of maybe moved you toward politics at some point?
Well, I would have to say my father served in the House from 94 to 98. So he served 4 years. So I was, you know, here working at that time and pretty much making a mess out of my life the best way I knew how. But I guess it runs in your blood. You know, I never thought that politics would be something that I would get into. Never dreamed that in a million years. But, you know, you never know where the Lord's going to send you. You never know where he's going to lead you. And I feel like that he has led me into this, and it's something that, you know, that I don't take for granted.
Right. What are the things you talked about? You love this area. What are some of the, like, real characteristics of this area that you think are some of our biggest strengths?
Well, we're old fashioned. I love being old fashioned. You know, I love rural areas. I also love, you know, urban areas. I love Johnson City. I mean, it's a great place to go shopping. It's a great place to you know, go out and eat. But the main reason is the people. I mean, we just have really good, genuine people here. And I'm glad. I think that being around good, genuine people, a big portion of my life is one reason I'm still alive. Because I always, when I was doing drugs and drinking really bad, I always looked at people and knew that there was a different life.
Right.
And that was something that I wanted, you know.
Yeah.
And a lot of those people's people that I grew up watching. So, yeah, I mean, that's part of why, you know, I just love the people here.
Yeah. So I'm glad you mentioned that because, I mean, we were talking before we got started about how we're really trying to make a dent in addiction, mm-hmm. the addiction problems that we see. And you've already mentioned that you were using drugs and alcohol. Tell me a little bit about how did you find your way into that? And what did that look like in your life?
First, I mean, you know, my family, I grew up in church early in life. And actually my father was a choir leader and a deacon, you know, and I mean, my entire family went to the same church. And, along when I was about 10, 11 years old, something changed, okay? And the next thing I knew, you know, my parents were getting a divorce. And then from there, our family sort of just spiraled somewhat out of control, you know? Nobody's fault. It's just nobody, I don't think, knew what to do. Back then, you know, divorce was a big thing. And a lot of people went different ways. So I found myself, you know, sort of dazed and confused of all of it because our life and our family totally took a 180-degree turn.
Right.
So I started using drugs whenever I was about 13 years old. You know, wow. a lot of folks, that's along when they start experimenting with it. As by the time I was 19, I was a full-blown alcoholic. I mean, I drank all the way through school. I made it through school, you know, but then I really had a hard time after school and wound up being a meth addict and a
wow. Yeah.
You know, it was a really bad situation. I drank every day nearly. And so I came very, very close to death. So
yeah,
the Lord picked me up out of all that.
Right. So I want to ask you, just because you said this was after your family had gone through that divorce and all of that. Were you trying to replace that family feeling when you started experimenting with drugs? What was it you think that, or was it just a natural curiosity that happens to hit when you're around that age? What do you think it was that you were you looking to try to find something at that time or what?
Yeah, I think I was looking to try to find something. I mean, you know, that is a time that a lot of kids are struggling with self-esteem issues. They're struggling to figure out their way. I mean, I think God designed us that way. You know, along 10, 11, 12, 13 is a trying, hard time in kids' life. And I think we're seeing that now. I know it was in mine. And you know, I found a different avenue and a friends that I partied with and I found that it was a different life that I could enjoy. And but before I knew it, you know, it turned into something that I was just totally addicted to.
So you're just all in on that.
Yeah,
sort of
I was all in. I mean, I'm like that. Anything that I do, I'm all in on it.
Right.
So that's good and it's bad, you know. So now I try to find positive addictions to put that energy into. So, because Lord knows I've done enough negative addictions.
Yeah. So you mentioned it was the people in the you referenced the people in the areas helping you find healing and that sort of thing. Was there a particular person, or was it a family member, or was it a group of people that helped you realize it's time for some things to change, or was there something you found within yourself that kind of helped lead you to that change?
I think it's something that I found within myself. I found myself at 39. I had three broken marriages, you know, and had lost everything that I had twice in my life. Okay. And, you know, it was a time when I really had to sit down and do a lot of soul searching. And I had a person in my life at that time, which I'm married to now. We've been happily married for 21 years now.
Oh.
So, but at that time, you know, she was pretty strong and trying to help me. I was at the verge of losing her. So I sort of turned to the only thing that I knew, and that was to the Lord. And
right.
And it was I decided to make it a slow process, you know, so I got around good people. That's the first thing I did. Was I did have to go to a little treatment outpatient thing. They seen that I meant business, and it didn't take much for me to get clean and sober once I finally got around good people.
Right.
Then I got back in church, and it really, really, really made a difference.
Having that community around you kind of
helped
you.
Yeah, and the good people. I mean, it's a lot of the people where I started going to church is people that I had seen when I was 7, 8, 9 years old growing
right.
up in church, you know. So it's really cool to get back around them and get to know them. And,
yeah.
And you know, they really stuck with me.
Well, I was going to say, so what was that response like coming back?
Yeah,
knowing where you were coming from, was the church just open arms ready to have you back?
Oh, man, I mean, they really stuck with me and still do to this day. Okay,
yeah.
So it's really exciting. You know, people say sometimes that they can't find support groups, or they can't, it's hard for them to get around people. That I don't buy that.
Right. They're there.
There is hundreds of thousands of good people around.
Okay.
It's just that we have to step out of our comfort zone and we have to reach out and we have to find those folks. And that's our responsibility.
Well, and we also, we're trying to also encourage the church, because we know that there are lots of churches that want to help people.
Sure.
But a lot of times they don't know how.
No.
And a lot of times they don't realize that they maybe unintentionally seem a little bit closed off, you know, mm-hmm. don't seem as well. And there's some churches, like you said, there's some churches that are going to be ready to welcome you right back. And there's some churches that, you know, need that little nudge, that little bit of a reminder. Hey, it might, all it might take is just you welcoming people in to really, you know. Yeah.
Time is a big factor in the world that we live in.
Yeah. Being willing and be willing to stick it out with people.
Yeah.
Knowing that. So after you kind of went through that outpatient thing, found your way back into the church, found your way into the lives of some people that were there going to support you. Was that it for you? Were you out and you were good and you were clean the rest of the way? Were there any struggles after that?
No, there really wasn't any struggles after that. I mean, I stayed in an aftercare program for, 6 years. They had to run me off, you know. I mean, they really did. So, and you know, I worked really hard. I mean, I've always been very blessed. My father taught me at a very young age how to work and how to get things accomplished. So I always knew how to work. So I was able, that's a huge part of recovery is a job. It's huge. And learning something that you know how to do well, because that's where self-esteem comes from.
Yeah.
Okay. And you have to support yourself. That's a huge part in recovery. So I was able to get back on my feet and work extremely hard.
Find that purpose.
Yes.
Outside of what you've been doing to kind of keep you going. Yeah.
Not go about it in a addictive way.
Yeah.
Like I had always done before, you know, still keeping boundaries and having fun things to do. Like it's okay to go fishing.
Right.
You know, and it's okay to let up some, but
fill yourself,
you're at work,
fill yourself with those other, you're looking for something.
Yeah.
Just fill yourself with those right things instead. Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
Volunteer is a huge part of
helping
it.
People.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I love that. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love that because, I mean, like I was saying, a lot of what we think is actually the solution for a lot of this stuff that we see in our, I mean, specifically in Appalachia, but anywhere that people are struggling with this kind of thing is just having the right people in their lives.
Yeah.
Being around the right community and having people that are willing to, like you said, stick it out with you too, because it takes time and knowing that for some people, their stories are going to be different. Some people will be in and back out and in and back out, and just continuing to be with them along the way makes a huge difference.
Sure. It does.
Yeah. So was it, how long was it between when you got back into the church and got back into working that you started feeling that tug? Maybe I'm supposed to, you know, follow my dad's footsteps and do something in the government, do something in the politics.
It was quite a while. I mean, it was actually 15, 16 years into my recovery. You know, I tried to help folks, you know, we had a recovery program at church and, you know, there was times when people would, they knew what I'd been through, you know, so they would call and maybe have a family member that needed to talk or something, you know, so I'd always done that. And then I was around at work. I was around a lot of people that's in recovery.
Right.
'Cause I have a construction company and we started, you know, trying to get folks jobs.
Yeah.
It was in recovery. So, and I don't know, it's just like, I was in the Home Builders Association and we would go to Nashville, you know, twice a year. And as I would go down there, you know, and I would stop and think, and I would look at some of the representation that we had from Northeast Tennessee. And I thought, you know what, I think I could do this. I think I could, you know, I care about the people. One of the biggest reasons was because of addiction that I really wanted to, you know, to get into politics to try to help that situation some. So lo and behold, you know,
Here you are. And
I mean, it's just like the Lord set it up. I mean, he had the right people come to me and ask me to run.
Yeah.
It's not like I decided one day. It's like he even nudged
me. You don't have a choice in this. It's time to go.
It was, I mean, it was so weird.
Right.
You know, and I was actually, this is a cool little deal, but I was actually fishing and I was on the verge of turning pro. in bass fishing.
Okay.
I was big time into bass fishing. Okay. And I'm in the Emmaus community.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
And I had a big tournament and they was having a walk the same weekend. And I'd been asked to be on that walk and I turned it down to go to this bass tournament. And I have never felt so guilty in all my life. Okay. And I was really doing good in fishing. So I went to the tournament. But on the way, I just felt so, I said, Lord, if you let me fish this year, I will quit. If you let me, and you know, I went that day and won that tournament, okay? Had the best year, 2016, had the best year of fishing that I ever had. I mean,
right.
I won a boat. I won a couple of BFLs. I mean, I've done a really good job that
right.
year. And the last tournament was in October, and I've never fished since.
Wow.
And I was on a lot of those walks, you know, and I don't know. It was just easy to do that.
It was time to let that thing go.
It was taking up too much time. I figured there's more to life than fishing, you know.
Right.
And that's when I really sort of started working with folks more in recovery.
Yeah.
And then that's what led me to sort of wind up running for office.
So was the state of Tennessee already focused or invested in recovery and addiction work as you were coming in? Or is that something that you kind of helped bring to the table on your way in? What was the kind of the state and how has the state maybe been changing over the last few years since you got into this?
Well, the state does a great job at trying to put funds and trying to put laws into place to do what they can. We're a very diverse state.
Right.
You know, so what's good for Memphis and what's good for Nashville and what's good for Northeast Tennessee are three different totally things.
Right.
You know? So I tried to bring just some good old-fashioned treatment, loving on people.
Yeah.
You know, and just trying to go about it a little bit different way. I you know, when I first went down there, I was sort of almost against MAT treatment. Okay. Right. I mean, I was pretty much, I'd heard through people that I had seen go through recovery, you know, and hearing the horror stories of going that route. But since I've been down there, I've learned that there's several different kinds of treatment and they're all okay because addicts are all different. And what right. worked for me may not work for somebody else.
Right.
So I've opened my mind to that more and more, especially over the last 2 years.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Rome Mountain facility, I mean, that was something that we worked really hard on, and I was blessed to be able to talk to the governor, man.
So
I
tell
mean,
me about that. What is the Rome Mountain facility?
It's through our recovery courts, which our recovery courts has been going on for a number of years. It's just that in recovery court, they pretty much either have to stay in jail or if they get out, there's really not a treatment program for those folks, okay? So this is a program to where they can actually leave jail and go to this treatment facility in Rome Mountain, which used to be a prison, and we've turned it into a great recovery center.
Yeah.
Over the last year, and the judges really know what these guys have been through. They know their heart. It's not for everyone, but the judges are real good at picking who should come up there and then working them in a way to prepare them for coming up there.
Right.
And so far, I mean, we opened last October, so it's coming up on a year. We'll have our first graduation of, I think, 8 or 10 guys.
Nice.
In the 1st of November.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, these guys have been up there for a year. They've got a job. They're paying off all their fines. They're saving money. They're sending money home to their families. They're spending time with their kids.
Right.
They're getting everything back together, just like sort of what I did.
Right.
So that's why I like it so much. Yeah. So it's really a great facility.
Very nice. Yeah. So just talking about different, like, because you said different things work for different people.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we're trying to test in a sense, but we also believe it's going to work because, to be honest, like, we read the Bible and it says, here's the way that it works best if you live your life this way. Basically talk about being in community with people, connecting with people. And we think that helping people find, just like you said, you found really strong faith communities, you know, within the church is a really effective way maybe to help supplement, maybe not we're not trying to replace, you know, medication assisted treatment or any mm-hmm. of these other things, but have one other option that's out there too. What kind of place do you think there is in the state for, you know, the church to kind of step in and help serve in that way to help people that find recovery and that sort of thing?
I believe in the world we live in today that it's extremely important for the church to step in.
Yeah.
I mean, the church needs to step up in many ways. I feel like a lot of churches have compromised on the true word of God. And really and truly, in the we have way more than addiction problems, okay? It's life problems.
Right.
And faith and the biblical worldview is one of the things that this country was founded on. They understood that virtue and morality, that every person, when they founded this country, that mainly every person needed those qualities.
Right.
And that comes through faith.
Yeah.
That's really the only place that comes from. Okay.
Yeah.
It just does not happen. And we're missing that. We're missing that in this world that we live in. So
yeah.
I believe that churches need to step up in our schools. I think we can do a lot about addiction, don't get me wrong, but we right. got to start worrying about the next generation.
Right. Well, because all of these things are connected. You
it,
know?
Is. Fam- it is.
Effective
it is.
Family units and mm-hmm. schools and, you know, having safe community spaces for kids to go. All of these things are connected because addiction ties right into that. And, you know, if there's addiction in the household, then that's going to hurt the family unit. That's going to hurt parents finding a job. That's going to hurt it. All of these things are connected to one another, which
sure.
is why we think getting the church in and really, you know, surrounding people with the faith community, the body of believers, is really what's going to help set people apart from that cycle, kind of help break that cycle along the way.
If recovery is not a life-changing experience, then typically it doesn't last.
Right. Oh, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
It's just a fact. I mean, because I have tried to clean myself. I mean, I was sober one time and clean and sober for 10 years.
Right.
And went back. Those 10 years, all I done was didn't drink and didn't do drugs. Okay. I was not in a church.
You were the same person trying to do different things.
And it did not work. I mean, I had gotten a divorce, but before I sobered up, I had a wife leave me right in the middle of being clean and sober, building a great business and everything.
Yeah.
Okay. So I really wasn't much of, I yeah. wasn't much of a difference of a person. And so I really studied on that, you know, and
right.
I looked at that and I said, you know, I gotta get back and let the Lord lead me.
Right.
So, and that's what other people need to do. And look, it's a slow process.
Yeah.
We're a society that wants things immediately.
Absolutely.
Okay. This is something that takes time. I've watched people with an addictive personality, if they jump too hard and jump too fast, they burn out.
Right.
Okay. It's something that I have really taken my time with because I'm in it for the long haul.
Right.
I had a poor start I want a very strong finish.
Yeah.
And in this middle time here, I want to just gain strength for the finish.
Right.
So,
yeah,
I think it's important for people to look at it that way.
Yeah. So, obviously we're on the same page about the church needing to step up and kind of help fill some of these gaps. What from the state perspective, cuz you know, I listen to my political podcasts, I listen to the news and these sorts of things, and there are a lot of voices out there saying we got to keep these things as far apart as we possibly can. Mm-hmm. Is that true in the state of Tennessee, or is the state of Tennessee in a place where it values needing to have, you know, the church, faith community kind of involved in meeting the needs of the people of the state of Tennessee?
I think it's very important to have leaders that leads by faith. Okay. In politics, there's a lot of folks that thinks that the two should totally be divided, just like what you said.
Right.
Okay. I think that the problem is so a lot of the public thinks that we take the place of what churches should be doing. Okay? And they think it's our job to do something with the teachers in school that might bring up something they shouldn't. They think it's our job to pass laws on books in our libraries. They think it's our job to do all this. They think that we took the Ten Commandments and the Bible out of the schools, when honestly, the parents took it out of the kitchen table long before any politician ever took anything out. Okay?
Right. Yeah.
So the governor that we have now is very faithful to the Lord.
Right.
Okay. And he has done things. He has made strides for the faith-based community like no one ever has.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think that there's a place for that.
Yeah.
And I think that the state sees that. You know, I would, there's a lot of money going toward counselors in our schools now, you know.
Right.
And I worry about that. At first, I loved it. But what kind of counselors are these?
And are there enough humans to actually fill all those roles yet that are trained and equipped? You know,
there's no way.
Right. Yeah.
I would like to see a way for the church to step up and go into our schools.
Be free. Just be free to be the church. If they'll have them.
And just love on kids.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That's what I would like to see.
Yeah. And that really is a different way of kind of approaching a lot of the issues that we see as a society. And that's kind of one of the things that I think we're interested in. I've been kind of describing us as we want to be disruptors, not in that we want to, you know, rile people up and like really, you know, fight and make a big fuss over things, but as much as we just want to try things differently than maybe they've been tried in the past and really try to encourage the church to work in a different, like you said, instead of passing it off and saying, well, the government will take care of it, we'll let them take care of it. We'd much rather say, what if instead we just did what we should do anyways,
sure,
that sort of thing. And so we really do want to try to, you know, kind of bring a different perspective to, and again, we're focusing primarily on addiction, but it's mental health challenges. We just want to see people flourishing. We just want to see the people of, you know, right now we're focused primarily on Northeast Tennessee, but you know, this is something that we think the church can do anywhere and ought to be doing anywhere, you know, especially anywhere in the state that we already call home. And so we really do want to kind of find different ways to kind of try different things, because I don't know what your opinion is on all of this, but it's like, we're trying lots of things to help solve addiction, but numbers keep going. And there are lots of factors to that. There's a lot of supply coming into the region. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to fix the supply problem. Mm-hmm. We're looking at the demand side. We want to help the people that are getting trapped in this stuff by having the church kind of step up and do what it's supposed to do. But it's an interesting conundrum for us, because we've only been in existence for about 4 years. We've only really been going hard at this for what, maybe a year and a half. because we don't have a very loud voice. And there are lots of people with loud voices, and especially people with loud voices that are closer to Nashville. So things tend to get heard a little bit more. And a lot of those people, and I'm not trying to say that there's absolutely nothing to do with the disease model when you're talking about addiction or anything like that, but a lot of the focus goes to the disease model. I think people understand that really well. Mm-hmm. But we think there are lots of societal factors that are at play outside of it just being only it can be fixed with a pill or only it can be fixed with this medication. I know we already kind of mentioned this. We don't think that that's necessarily wrong by itself, but at the same time, we think there might be more that we can add on top of those sorts of options. But a lot of the people with the loudest voices are really only kind of focused in that one area. Mm-hmm. So in your opinion, just because you've been in Nashville, you've heard people, you probably have meetings all the time with people who have those loud voices. What's the best way to kind of get that message out or really to be able to communicate what it is that we're trying to do at a state level, in your opinion?
That's hard. I mean, it's extremely hard. You know, I think the governor set up a new faith-based initiative, and there is actually we set up a way for there to be funding for that.
Right.
And I think that would be the best way, is get connected with the folks that are over that.
Yeah.
And get them up here.
Yeah,
hear your story.
Yeah,
I do believe that's the best way.
Just do a lot of lobbying, right? Just getting the right.
That's what makes everything like tick,
right?
In Nashville, is
just getting the right people in the right meet in the right rooms and having the right conversations.
It is. I mean, that has a whole lot to do with it. I know those contacts. You know,
yeah.
And it's that's where I would start. Because we passed that last year through
right.
the faith-based initiative.
I'm sure we've been involved in some of those conversations as well.
It's just new.
Yeah.
It's just started. But, you know, the governor, he's only going to be there two more years.
Right.
Then there'll be another governor.
Yeah.
So it's very important.
Now's the time.
It's very important to act now, because
yeah.
he will, with his faith, he will be working on things like that, I think, over the next 2 years. Yeah. So it's near and dear to his heart. He's a great guy.
Yeah. You talked about him only being here two more years. We're obviously in an election year right now. I know that a lot of people get focused on, you know, national politics and stuff in years like this. Does that affect your work at the state level when we're in a year like this, when there's kind of that news cycle where everybody's focusing on kind of the big national stories and that sort of thing?
It doesn't for me.
Yeah.
I try to stay low key on that. And like, I'm a guy that I'm not on any kind of social media.
Right. That's hard to do today.
It is. I've not been in probably 10 years. So, you know, I hear what I hear. I
right.
try to keep up, you know, a little bit through the news, but this time of year, there's not a lot that goes on in Nashville, except,
right.
you know,
because y'all are out of session right
yeah,
now.
Certain committee meetings, you know, so there's not a lot right now.
You just get to focus on the people here right now and that
yeah.
sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hear a lot from what's going on and be ready to take it back to Nashville when the time comes. That kind
of thing. The second Tuesday in January.
You'll be there.
You go back in session.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's what we do, is we try to work on things and try to figure out what we can do starting in January.
Right. So what kinds of things are you mostly involved in when you're, are you in any particular committees or anything that you're really active in? What kind of?
Sure. I mean, I'm on health sub. So both of those, I'm on education and education sub, and I'm also on finance and finance sub. I'm on physical review committee, which we meet every month. I got to go next week to Nashville. I'm on calendar and rules. I'm the co-chair of calendar and rules. And I'm also the vice chair of the Republican caucus.
Okay.
So I have a lot of roles.
You wear a lot of hats.
I have, you know. So I've been blessed over the last 4 years to be able to run for some positions down there.
Yeah.
And my peers voted me in.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just try to get along and, once again, love on people.
Right. So you obviously already got the Roan Mountain thing through. What are there any particular big initiatives that you're really excited to see coming kind of down the line right now, or anything that you're hoping to see when you get back into session in January that you're wanting to really work toward? Or
no, I mean, this year I'm just going to work. There's some folks that want me to work on a few things, you know. Education is what I work on a lot.
Right.
I think that our education system over the last 20 years has got skewed. I mean, I'm big in vocational and technical education.
Yeah.
So I've passed some really good legislation on that. So last year I passed a bill that the Department of Education and the Superintendent Association and different folks has to come up with alternatives to Algebra 2. There's going to be some very happy students.
Oh, my daughter will be one of those.
I mean, so if you need to go a different path, if you're not going to go the college path,
right,
then you really don't need Algebra 2. Okay. And so many kids are failing Algebra 2 and they're getting disheartened. And that winds up being where I was at in
right.
school.
I mean, okay? I was homeschooled in high school, I'm sure, and my mom, who works on all of this stuff with me, will attest to the fact that there were many times that I spent Algebra 2 in the afternoon just in tears because it's hard.
I think 6% of the jobs requires Algebra 2.
Right. But all of our kids are required to go through it.
Yeah. And really, you know, something that is probably just as hard as like trigonometry and stuff. But a carpenter needs to know that.
Right.
So if you have a kid that wants to be a carpenter, okay,
let them learn the things they want to do.
Carpenter classes, then he is going to naturally, it's going to be easier for him to learn trig.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the kind of things that I think we need to. We need to open up in education.
Yeah.
I think that every student is different, and we've put them all in the same box.
Yeah.
And I think that's where a lot of our addiction comes from. I truly do believe that that's where a lot of kids are getting sideways at a time in their life.
When things are so hard. Yeah.
And they're being sort of forced to go this college route.
And if you're not equipped for that, that seems very hopeless. And so if you got no hope, try to feel better than
I know where I'm going to end up.
Right.
So I mean, I think that's one reason that I work on that so hard because
it's all connected.
I never wanted to go to college. I never even thought about going to college. You know, I wanted to go to work, and after school. After high school, I learned more about math by going to work.
Yeah,
you know, than I did any other time. So we need to mesh those together. So I work really hard on education.
Like you said, finding work is such an important thing. I mean, one of the organizations that we're partnering with right now is Recovery Resources Housing, which is a bunch of guys that live in a house together that are in recovery. But we're going to help find churches to transport them, help them find transportation to get to their jobs, but specifically to get to the Tennessee Technology Center so they can learn some of those skills and find jobs and stuff after they get through the program and that sort of thing, because that's kind of what it takes. And we think that it's like, we got to get these guys somewhere. We all might as well get some church people around and building relationships with them while they're riding from one place to another. So
sure.
They run
a great program.
I talked with him last week and I'd met him before, but when we spoke a week ago, I don't know how long it'll be between episodes when these come out, but like I interviewed him for this last week and man, it is exciting to talk to him. He's so passionate about the stuff that they're doing, but yeah, just getting people into the, like learning the skills that are actually going to help them long-term is huge.
Sure. There's a lot of folks. I have a painting crew that pretty much every person on that painting crew is in recovery. And a lot of them came through Recovery Resources.
Right.
You know, through
those are the kind of success stories that we all want to see.
Sure.
That's exactly what we want to see.
Sure.
Well, anything else you want to share about what you're doing, what the state's doing, what your construction companies do, anything like that?
I just think on a state standpoint, you know, I look forward to serving a few more years to be able to really. It takes a while for people down there to learn me.
Right.
And for me to learn them. I didn't do well in school, so I'm not that brainy type of person, okay? So I work off of relationships.
Yeah.
So over the last 4 years, I built some great relationships down there, and now they're starting to see, you know, who I really am. So I look forward to the next few years, you know, really working with those folks down there and trying to, we have a lot to offer in Northeast Tennessee. Okay. We have great people, kind-hearted people that understands and knows how to love on people. And that's lacking in other parts of the state.
Yeah.
So I want to do all I can to make us shine in that.
Yeah.
And you know, get people back on track. So I look forward to it. And that has to do with health. It has to do with what we eat. Education, it's a huge part of it. So I'll truly look forward to that. One more thing.
Yeah.
Something in Nashville that I never dreamed.
Right. Okay.
Whenever I got elected, you know, you're going down there. You know, I hadn't even been out of gray much, to be honest with you. And you're very nervous about the kind of folks that's down there. I have never witnessed a group of good Christian, hardworking people.
Yeah.
We have we have Bible study every Tuesday morning. We have a service every Wednesday morning.
Yeah.
I mean, and there's just good-hearted, good Christian people that really serve in
Nashville. Really encouraging to hear.
It is. I mean, I never dreamed that it would be that way, and it's all the way across the board that way.
Wow, so that's great.
I was amazed.
Yeah.
So I feel like I was really worried, especially me being a recovering addict.
Like, what's the reception going to be?
Going to Nashville.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's a shift. It's a big change.
It was huge. Okay. It was very hard. So, I mean, but we have counselors. We have a chaplain.
Yeah.
I've got to know him. He's a good friend of mine. He comes up here and stays with me. So it's really cool.
Nice.
So people don't know that.
But it's true. And that's good to know.
Yeah.
That's really good to know.
Yeah.
Awesome. Next time on Intrinsically Motivated. To me, Scotland feels a whole lot like Appalachia here. So, like, I mean, we're trying to minister to a relatively rural people who are struggling with lots of different sorts of mental health things, struggles with addiction, all that. And all that's the same over there, too, right?
The churches are closing. They're turning them into bars. Someone needs to come be a missionary to Scotland. I said, ooh, missionary to Scotland. I could get around that.
Intrinsically Motivated is an Uplift Appalachia podcast. Uplift Appalachia seeks to replace addiction and mental health challenges with flourishing, and we believe that an intrinsically motivated church is the answer. To learn more, visit upliftappalachia.org.